Welcome in, everyone, to the Real Estate Tax Playbook, where we discuss all things real estate, providing timely and precise tax information to real estate professionals looking to build their own customized tax planning playbook. I'm your host, Evan Ross. I'm a tax director with Brown Edwards & Company, based out of the Roanoke, Virginia office. For those of you unfamiliar with Brown Edwards & Company, please go visit our website. A link to that site can be found in the description to this podcast. Please go find information on some of our other service lines, as well as our locations and our other service providers. With all that being said, I would like to introduce to you our guest for today, John Hanning with Specialty Tax Group. John, great to see you. Thanks for coming on today. How you doing?
Yeah, I couldn't be better. Thanks for asking. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Great. Well, I have to ask, it's been a while since I've seen you, but how's the golf game? It's been a while since we've last played. Unfortunately, we lost that match with some colleagues. So how are you playing as of late?
It's troubling. It's summertime, so I'm trying to get out there when I can, but not hitting the shots I'd like to. Unfortunately, we're fortunately wrapped up in the world of tax and specialty tax. So yep. I guess that's a good thing.
It's a good problem to have. So we'll hopefully sometime this fall, or we can get together and maybe play around sometime. So
absolutely. I look forward to it. Maybe you can invite some guests that we could beat.
I'm all for that.
Rather than get mopped up by a couple of superstars.
Yep. Very good. Well, hey, before we get into the topic for today, just want to give you a chance to kind of introduce yourself as well as Specialty Tax Group. Kind of tell us a little bit about the firm and kind of your role within the company.
Yeah. So I'm the founding principal of Specialty Tax Group, and Specialty Tax Group is an organization that does credits and incentives, and specifically cost segregation, R&D credits and incentives, some state stuff. We do a lot of work around the ITC or green energy incentives. So we typically come alongside, super regional firms, CPA firms, to help deliver in that vein. Maybe they don't already have our technical expertise in-house. We partner with those folks to help deliver on those credits and incentives that are being sought out by their clients. My specific background is I've been doing cost segregation for the last 20 years. So as I explain that to people at parties, that I'm a federal specialist in understanding how commercial property depreciates, they quickly move away from me at parties, right? But it is my life's work. I've been involved in an organization called ASCSP. It's American Society of Cost Seg Professionals. I've been on the board for about 8 years, and that's an organization that helps credential, holds accountable, and educates its membership. And so I always like to say, you can put anything you want on a tax return, but when the IRS comes knocking, you want to make sure it's right. And so that organization, gives us a lot of education, keeps us at the cutting edge of what it is we do, and makes certain that we're doing it correctly. So,
very good. Yeah, obviously, you and I have had a relationship, and you've worked on some of my clients, and really appreciate all you've done for those clients so far, and hopefully in the future as well.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Very good. Well, with that being said, let's go ahead and dig into the topic for today. Cost segregation study. You mentioned it kind of in your intro, but that's going to be the topic for today. So can you just give us kind of an overview of what the purpose of a cost segregation study is, what that looks like, and how it can benefit real estate professionals?
Yeah. So cost segregation is an accelerated depreciation tax strategy. So we work with real estate owners, whether it's commercial or they're buying residential properties. I like to say anybody with bricks and sticks. So we work with folks that have bricks and sticks to help reduce their tax liability through accelerated depreciation. So we can do that. We're not creating any additional depreciation. We're just front loading the depreciation allowable to the taxpayer using cost segregation and the tax laws that surround that.
Very good. So when you're looking at it, obviously not everybody's going to qualify for this. So what's kind of a good criteria or good candidate you kind of look for in moving forward with a cost segregation study?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, you know, sometimes a client will come to me and say, hey, look, I have a personal home. Can I do cost segregation on that? And the answer is no, it needs to be held out for the production of income. So if you bought an Airbnb, then yeah, maybe. But typically we like to say, is there a basis of $1 million or more? So when we're making movements to personal property and or land improvements, we're making them on a percentage basis based on, you know, the asset. But, you know, if the basis itself is small, then that percentage dollar amount moved is going to be small. So, you know, it's also one of the questions we ask right out of the gate is we're trying to offset income, current year income. So sometimes I'll have a, you know, biotech company come to me and say, hey, we just built a $10 million building. Certainly over $1 million. Can I do a cost segregation? The follow-up question to that is, sure. Are you making money? No. We're not going to make money for 10 years. Well, then this is probably not a tax strategy for them, right? We want to drive down current income. There's a fee to the study. So we don't want to have them pay a fee where they can't immediately use the deduction. So also we'll ask, hey, look, how long are you going to keep the property? Somebody comes to me and says, hey, I'm going to flip this, you know, commercial building. I'm going to come in and renovate it and sell it within the year. Well, if you're selling it within a year, there is no allowable depreciation. If you're selling it in the first 2 years, you know, where's the net present value or ROI on that? So as a part of the time value of money concept of cost segregation, one of the components of that is time. And you need enough time to be able to recover that initial fee. So we do a benefit analysis with anything that we engage on. And so we want to make sure, and the reason we're doing that is we want to make certain that, you know, this is the right tax strategy for them. And then, of course, they know exactly what they can expect from a benefit standpoint before they sign the engagement letter. Also, you know, we're in the same business as you, kind of under promise and over deliver, right? So when we're putting together those benefit estimates, we're doing it based on our experience over the last 20 years. But we tend to hedge our bets. We want to make sure that if they're making a business decision based on these accelerated depreciation deductions, that we don't come up short in the end.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. And it sounds like there's definitely a lot of incentive for doing these studies if it's the right circumstances and you do have income to potentially offset. I will say, just to clarify, you mentioned that $1 million. Is that one property or can that be an aggregate? If you have a portfolio of, call it 10, 20, 30 properties, could you do it on that even though the basis may be $100,000, $200,000 per property?
Yeah, that's a phenomenal question. And when I got into the industry, it used to be $1 million, but that actual, you know, per property number is coming down to 500,000 or so. And that's because of bonus depreciation. With the advent of bonus depreciation in 2001 and then the fact that it's been accelerated to 100% in 2017, the true value of cost segregation is certainly juiced or supersized by taking that those deductions all in the first year, or 80% of them in the first year. So but to answer your other question, you know, it is an aggregate. So if somebody comes to me, or I hear this a lot, we love the opportunity to qualify an opportunity and disqualify an opportunity. So when people come to us and say, hey, look, I never ask you about cost segregation because I heard that, you know, the threshold was 500 or $1 million. And I have, you know, 80 rental properties and each of them are only worth about $250,000 to $300,000. Hold on. That's a huge portfolio of aggregate tax basis that we can certainly, impact your current year income with. So also, you know, if you have properties that exceed 100, we're seeing a lot of that, you know, throughout the nation where, you know, real estate, holding companies are buying single family homes. They're buying, you know, every building or every single family home and in a portion or in a town. So, we can oftentimes use statistical sampling, and that is an approved method by the IRS Or if you own 100 franchisees, all of which are very similar, they're all McDonald's, and you own the real estate as it relates to that, then we can do a statistical sampling. And what that means is, hey, look, we're only going to do a, 30 properties, but, using statistical sampling, we can apply it to the rest of the population. So what it does is lowers the fees for, the building owners, for the cost segregation, but gives them every bit of the benefit, throughout the entire population. So yeah, great question. It's an aggregate. Don't just disqualify it because, hey, look, it's less than $500,000. Just give us an opportunity to take a look at it. If we disqualify it, then but you may be surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, sounds like it's definitely worth having a conversation, not just disqualifying without at least exploring potentially. So
yeah,
very good. You mentioned methodologies and all that. How do you go about, I assume there are certain standards you have to use when you're breaking out this property. How do you kind of determine what components are being broken out into 5-year, 7-year class, 10-year class, 15-year class? How does that work on your end?
Yeah, I'll answer it this way, and it's going to give me way too much credit. it was explained to me like this when I got in is, hey, look, we got to be a good accountant because you've got to know, you've got to know that how this is being implemented into their, their tax strategy. But Jen, you got to be a good engineer too, because you have to know, how building components are put together, how they're affixed to the structure. You got to be able to read plans, look through construction drawings, and construction documents. So you've really got to be, a good contractor or those kinds of things, a good engineer. And then third, you've got to be kind of an attorney at some point, right? You're using case law that's been built up over many, many years to support your findings. How do you know carpet's a 5-year asset? Well, because in 1997, a landmark case, Hospital Corporation of America, there's a case that indicates that is such. So, those three components, kind of melted together, kind of gives us, our expertise.
Very good. Very good. So we've gotten to the point, we've kind of qualified our property, portfolio properties. What's the next step? What do you need from a client to kind of move forward? The documentation, what kind of gets the ball rolling once we've decided, yes, this is a good fit?
During the proposal process, we're gathering some information, but hey, if we've decided to move forward and do a cost segregation, we're looking at two different ways. Okay, was this newly constructed or was it acquired? Was it an existing building that they acquired? There are two different approaches. So if it was acquired, we'd like the closing statement, any appraisals, property condition reports, ALTA surveys, anything that we can gather, that might give us information or insight on what did you buy. So we're going to look at all of that and then put that in the supportability of the study. Now, for new construction, it's a different approach. We're given cost. Here's the, AIA G, 702, 703. This is the detail by trade that the GC will be able to provide. Were there any soft costs outside of the GC scope? We want the engineered drawings, all of that. So these were for, the acquisition, we're having to estimate cost. A lot of times we're given cost in new construction. And so we take those two different approaches when doing a cost seg.
Very good. Do you kind of see more, in your experience, more acquisitions or new construction that are electing to do cost seg studies?
Yeah, good question. So I like to answer it like this. Back prior to 2017, mm-hmm. We did about 65% of our projects on acquisitions. Now that has gone up ever since 2017. And that's because of the change in bonus rules. And bonus used to be applicable to newly constructed property only. And in 2017, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act allowed for bonus depreciation to be applicable for acquisitions. So, you know, I'd say about 75% is acquisitions. They're a lot more, so we're transaction related. There are a lot more buildings that are being purchased than coming out of the ground or being constructed. So that's really the delta.
Yep. I would definitely agree with that. So we've gotten all that information. We're kind of moving the ball forward. How long does a cost segregation study typically take, all things going smoothly?
Yeah. So my general quote to that is, you know, between 30 and 45 days. You know, we want to gather information, complete the study as a part of all quality studies. A site visit is required. So we'll go out and see the property in its natural habitat, right? So we'll have a lot of the study done before we go out. So we're very familiar with what we're expecting to see. But, you know, maybe the drawings, what we received were incorrect, right? They never built that wing or whatever. So we really need to go out and see and gather additional information. Helps with the supportability of the study as well. So 30 to 45 days is a good timeline. Now, if I had everything tomorrow, I could probably get it done, you know, by the weekend. But, you know, a lot of it is, you know, data gathering and a review process. We're not only completing the studies, but they go through an extensive review process internally with our firm to make certain that they're correct.
Very good. And the site visits, that's typically just a one-day visit. You're just there for a short period of time or...
Yeah. We're there for a couple of hours. Depends on, you know, what property it is. You know, if it was a campus of medical office buildings to include an acute care hospital with 30 beds, I've been on one of those properties for about 5 days. But generally speaking, you know, industrial flex warehouse, office space, retail, strip mall, it's a couple of hours, you know, where we're documenting any discrepancies on what we believe, you know, we know to be true from the documentation that we gathered. We're taking photos just to show the IRS if this was ever audited, you know, and they went through a renovation, we can say, hey, no, it, you know, that asset was there, you know, when we were on site and when we did the study. So it just, again, helps with the supportability of the study.
Good. And you mentioned audit, although none of us want to deal with that or hope that we ever have to encounter that. Do you all provide any support or a backup or assistance if that does unfortunately happen to any of your clients that have had a cost seg study?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, really what you're, again, going back to, you know, you can put anything you want on a tax return, but you want to make sure it's right. And we think we're pretty good at what we do. And we relish the opportunity to put that on display in front of our clients, but in front of the IRS as well. So if you ever receive an audit and the cost segregation is subject to that audit, then, you know, give us a call. We're always including 8 hours of audit support with our engagements because we want to be there, defend our work. And give the client comfort that, hey, look, these guys are going to do it right because they're going to have to answer to somebody if they don't.
Very good. Yeah, you always hope that doesn't happen, but I mean, occasionally audits do arise. So it's great that you do provide that.
Yeah, in the few that I've been involved in, it's really an education process. You know, why did you do this? How did you take this position? Every property is different. It has different components to it. So, you know, we go through the deliverable and explain, you know, why we did what we did. And usually it ends up with no change.
Very good. You mentioned the deliverable. What does that look like? Is it a formal report, an email? How is that being delivered and what does it kind of look like or include?
Yeah, it comes in two components. So we want the audit ready deliverable. This is a PDF document that's a couple hundred pages that kind of not only gives the results of the study, but the supportability of why we did what we did and some of the nuances that we saw with that particular property, kind of explaining those nuances and how and why we took the positions that we took. For example, you know, hey, look, go back to that carpeting. Why is carpeting 5-year? Well, here's the case law. That's going to be in that final report. But that's separate from, you know, the results are also delivered in an Excel format. And the reason for that is really to help, you know, our CPA partners or the end user quickly upload the results into their fixed asset software. You know, that sometimes is a barrier. We're not here to create, you know, barriers or additional work for you and your staff. So we've created our deliverables so it's an easy upload to the actual software. So it eliminates human error, keying something in, and it eliminates the time that it would take for somebody to key it in. So those are the two deliverables that we deliver at the end of the project.
Well, me and my team definitely appreciate the Excel format. I've gotten depreciation reports in all different formats, so I do appreciate that is very clean and smoothly goes into our fixed asset software. So yeah. I do appreciate that. Probably the question that a lot of listeners are worried about. Everybody wants to save money on their taxes. Have you found that there's kind of a percentage or a tax savings amount that comes from these cost seg studies, or is it kind of all over the place?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are some ranges, but it's generally all over the place. You know, the basis is, you know, if you've got a $5 million basis, you know, we can potentially reclass, you know, up to 25 or 30% of that into accelerated personal property and or land improvements. And then, you know, was it 100% bonus year or 80% bonus year? That's really kind of, you know, what affects the first year deductions. You know, also, is it a warehouse? Is there, you know, it's just four walls, a roof, and a concrete floor. There's not really anything specialized within it. It's on a zero lot line, so there are really no exterior improvements. You know, that's going to yield less of a reclass than if it's, you know, a light manufacturing facility or, you know, an apartment complex. There are a lot of fit and finishes within those buildings, a lot of specialized machinery, equipment, plumbing and electrical that's helping to support those. So those are going to yield a lot greater reclass. And so, you know, there are ranges, but, you know, within those ranges, it's kind of all over the place.
Very good. Very good. You mentioned 100% bonus depreciation, 80% bonus depreciation. Obviously, as you and I both know, the Senate shut down some legislation on August 1st, I believe, that would have made some changes to bonus depreciation along with a lot of other tax items as well. Obviously, the presidential election is coming up in November. That's obviously going to potentially yield a lot of different outcomes for taxpayers. What is your kind of insight to what you believe is going to happen? What's on the horizon related to bonus depreciation in the future?
I appreciate that question. I dusted off my crystal ball just before this conversation and I've got all the answers. Seriously, the one constant with tax law is change. So we've had a form of bonus depreciation since 9/11/2001. Significant event in our country occurred, and what they did is they came out and said, hey, look, let's go ahead and incentivize folks to begin to build. Now it was 30%, it went to 50%, it went away for a while, it was then in 2011, 100%. And then most recently, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act made it 100% in 2017 for 5 years, and then stepping down each year after 2023 by 20% until it's finally exhausted after 2026. So I guess your question is, hey, look, you know, we had this bill that passed very quickly and swiftly through the House. It sat for about 9 months, and then it was shot down pretty quickly by the Senate. You know, it's an election year, and we're going to do a little bit of horse trading, right? You know, the Democrats want the child care tax credit reinstated, and you know, the Republicans generally want, you know, some favorable business incentives to be passed. And so that was bonus depreciation is one of those. Now, it was in that bill, it was to reinstate bonus retroactively through to 2025. Will we see that? You know, I'm not certain, but I guess if history tells me anything, since 2001, we will probably have some version of bonus perpetually. And what that, if it's 100% or if it's 50%, time will tell. But I think that, it's going to be a part of a sweeping tax package change, not until after, the new seat is filled in the White House, but we're going to see some change and we're going to roll with those punches.
Very good. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I do feel that some change will come post-election, regardless of what party is in office. But I do think the bonus depreciation will be around in some capacity. We'll just have to wait and see what that looks like and the impact on taxpayers. So, well, John, I really appreciate you coming on today. Before I wrap up the episode for today, do you mind just providing our listeners with your contact information? What's the best way to get in touch with you if there are follow-up questions related to a cost-seg study, if they're interested in potentially looking into this?
Yeah, this has been great. Thanks for having me on. So yeah, John Hanning with Specialty Tax Group, and you can go and find our information at speciallytaxgroup.com. My specific email is john.hanning@speciallytaxgroup.com. But if you get to any one of us, we're happy to help you out, answer questions. You know, that's how we win our work. We win our bread through, providing technical support to anybody who may call, whether they have a project or not. So we relish the opportunity to teach you what we know. Just give us a call and we're happy to help.
John, hey, I appreciate all the insight today. It was great seeing you. Definitely, hopefully next time you're in Roanoke, we can get together, whether it's for golf or something else. I'd love to see you.
Yeah, look forward to the opportunity. I'll try to make it to those beautiful mountains as the fall leaves change.
Yep, looking forward to it. Well, that is a wrap for this episode of the Real Estate Tax Playbook. I appreciate everyone for tuning in today and listening. Please make sure to visit Brian Edwards' website, as I mentioned before, for more information on our service lines, locations, and service providers. Also, please make sure to subscribe and listen to future podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. Again, I'm your host, Evan Ross. I look forward to providing additional real estate tax content in the future. Take care.